work in progress with Louis LeBlanc and Javier Siemens, possibly to come out in June. So I'll motivate why we think cosmic strings are interesting. The main reason is because they seem to be generic within a brain inflationary context. And they're detectable, which in combination with the string theory motivation is quite exciting. I'll talk about a generic instability of cosmic superstrings and the effects this will have on their cosmological evolution, as well as on the striking signature it'll produce. That's quite distinct from typical cosmic string signatures. So as I said, cosmic strings seem to be generic in a large class of brain inflationary scenarios. That's essentially because brain annihilation will produce codimension 2 defects. So combined with the Kibble mechanism, this will stretch cosmic strings throughout the universe at the end of inflation. And cosmic strings are surprisingly detectable. If they have a rather large tension, you can see them through direct lensing of galaxies. Or through the temperature discontinuity in the cosmic microwave background. That's the Kaiser-Stebbins effect. For lower tension, it's still possible to measure their gravitational bursts via the cusps and kinks on the cosmic spring loops, as well as other contributions to the cosmic microwave background. And what I'm claiming here today also is that even for extremely low tension strings, that is those otherwise completely unobservable, there actually is an empirical constraint from these monopole-induced gravitational wave bursts. Although pulsar timing also has a great chance to detect very low-tension cosmic strings. So there's a lot of work by Copeland, Myers, Polchinski, and also Martin Guth-Palenkin about why we expect monopoles and strings to appear together. From the field theory point of view, when we have a symmetry breaking of G to H cross U1, we'll generically get monopoles from that phase transition. And the flux from these monopoles will be further confined under a second phase transition that breaks this U1. So that essentially leads to a monopole with a large string leaving it. The parameters that describe this are its mass and the tension of that string. The fact that such an object exists will also tell us that an infinite string can break. And it's a non-perturbative process, so it's extremely small, or if you tune the mass to be large enough. So here's a typical brain inflationary scenario. We have a 2B flux compactification with an anti-B3 brain at the tip of some warp throat. And some other sector here. It almost doesn't matter what it is. Monopoles exist within this spectrum. So they're essentially described by either a D string or a fundamental string stretching between, say, the anti-brain at the tip of this throat and any other sector. The inflaton here is a mobile D3 brain. So the D3 brain is attracted to the bottom of the throat. This is slow roll inflation, or DBI inflation. And at the end of inflation, brain annihilation produces cosmic strings. So the Kibble mechanism is important for this. And these strings will always reside at the deepest point in the throat, the far infrared. Now these strings then can break, and the process of breakage really corresponds to the formation of this string stretching to this additional sector over here. So these monopoles are neutral under all light fields except gravity. And so they're not gut magnetic monopoles in any sense. These don't have electromagnetic charge coming off of them. And the fact that in this sector over here, this charge, the Coulombic charge is screened, means that these monopoles can drift arbitrarily far apart in space-time. Also, if the charge here is not screened, it can simply be confined at a lower tension, and that would also effectively enable monopoles to be produced at the ends of these cosmic strings. So the cosmological setup, then, is we have these extremely long high-tension objects stretched throughout the universe. And on a given length scale, we have monopoles at the ends. So these could either be super horizon, in which case they effectively behave like infinite strings, or they could be sub-horizon, and that's the relevant calculation. They'll then just oscillate at a characteristic frequency and radiate gravitational waves. So there's a stochastic background, which has been studied before, and what we're talking about is the burst background. Also, it's been studied in the context of simultaneous production of monopoles and strings. Our scenario is unique in that it's sort of necessary for the monopoles to be inflated away. And that's sort of natural in the braided inflation picture that I had up before. These monopoles are not produced at the end of inflation, and any that exist before inflation are completely diluted. It should be added that the fact that the monopoles don't exist at the end of inflation, but have to be produced non-perturbatively, means that the string network is much longer lived than it would be if there were simultaneous production of monopoles and strings.
Like how many horizon volumes per monopole?
So it entirely, well, it's a highly time-dependent function, and in fact, we'll derive that function. So this long string will eventually collapse to some highly relativistic setup with some characteristic impact parameter. And this cosmological length string, which collapses to a relatively short size, means that we get truly phenomenal relativistic gamma factors. So we're talking Hubble length in essentially string units here. This is really, really, really large. And it's that feature that enables these really intense gravitational bursts to be emitted in the direction the monopoles are moving. So we'll see that it's this gamma factor which is relevant for calculating the amplitude of that burst, and it's phenomenally large. It's really incredible. So brief review of cosmic strings is they're surprisingly observable and also hard to rule out in a certain sense because of their unique dynamics. The naive scaling of cosmic string energy density would be 1 over a squared, the scale factor squared. That would be the case if strings were inert, essentially because they're one-dimensional objects. But what, in fact, simulations show is that their energy density scales like 1 over cosmic time squared. And that's rather interesting because that means in the radiation era, they scale like 1 over 8 to the fourth, just like radiation. And in the matter era, they scale like 1 over 8 cubed, which is just like matter. So they track the dominant species. And they never increase their relative abundance. I guess I should have mentioned the overall coefficient is set by the tension, so you'd have g mu as your relevant quantity for the energy density. The mechanism by which this happens is that these strings are constantly colliding with each other. This is intercommutation. Maybe I could briefly sketch that. So two strings initially like this will then evolve into something like this. So this sort of string collision generates wiggles and kinks on these strings. And these wiggles will cause self-intercommutation in a certain sense, which leads to loop production. And so the wiggly strings are constantly emitting small loops of cosmic string and losing energy that way. And that enables them to scale far differently than you would naively expect. This process is the scaling solution of cosmic strings. So if we have a relative overabundance of strings compared to the stable solution, we'll have more collisions between cosmic strings, which means more wiggles on the strings themselves. And that means more loop production and more energy loss. So this is a very robust stable solution for cosmic strings. So in our case, we have not infinite cosmic strings, but segments of a given length. And when I say length, I'm really talking about the energy of the cosmic strings, because the length is changing, of course, and I really want to keep track of segments of a given energy, since they'll then stretch back out to their original length almost. I can write a Boltzmann equation to describe these segments, where I have some source term. And the source can be classified essentially by three terms: loop production, intercommutation of segments, and breakage of segments. This is the new piece introduced by the instability generic to cosmic string networks. So essentially, breakage is governed by the breakage rate. And we have contributions to n, so the number density is increased by all strings longer than the length we're describing. So longer strings can break to form shorter strings. And also, the strings in question disappear at a rate proportional to their length. So that is, they break to form even shorter strings. Intercommutation has a similar equation, although it's a bit more troubling to work out because this L over 2 essentially means we have a highly non-local differential equation to deal with. And then loop production, it's quite difficult to write down an explicit explicit form for what happens. But we know that these strings will scale. And so we can essentially say loop production can be absorbed into the change in length or energy of the strings. So by assuming scaling, which we can motivate and very strongly, we can sidestep the fact that we don't know how this loop interaction term really looks in the Boltzmann equation. So also there's a much easier way to derive the necessary parameter of the number density of cosmic strings of a given length. And that's this world sheet method, in essence. I know that decay events are uncorrelated. And that means that they obey a Poissonian distribution. So if I want to ask, what is the probability of a cosmic string having a given length, say this length or this length, at a given time, I know that it's entirely dependent on the area in the past of that cosmic string. So the probability of a string having say, this length here, is essentially, by the Poissonian distribution, e to the minus the rate times the area of this rectangle, so L times T. And then times the probability that there is a breakage over here. So using the same formula, T times DL, that's the width of this infinitesimal segment. So using this method, and knowing that the cosmic strings obey a scaling solution, fixes the number density, which is rather nice. So I can sidestep that Boltzmann equation, although we did actually solve the Boltzmann equation, and there is a slight difference. There's a factor of 2 in the exponent difference. So this is the correct answer is given by e to the minus 2 gamma 2 LT. So the signature is this extremely intense burst of radiation. That means that since the gamma factor of the monopole sets the scale of the amplitude of these bursts, even very, very low tension strings, which have no other observable signatures, can be easily ruled out by constraints like monopole gravitational bursts. And so what's important for this is the fact that the scaling solution is robust. So even though these strings are breaking, they're not disappearing. And we know that the scaling solution is robust because short string segments behave essentially like infinite strings, the only difference being that they spend about half their time like points and half their time like strings. So up to a factor 2 in their interaction cross-section, they really behave like infinite strings. So details of the gravitational burst calculation, essentially for a string of tension mu, which is having a monopole crossing with the gamma factor gamma at a proper distance r, we have this sort of strain. It's the plus polarization. And because it's such a relativistic system, the beam is also highly focused, and the angle of that apex is 1 over gamma. And it's not too difficult to go from these ideas and the number density to the LIGO detection event rate. And that's what we're really interested in, is how many burst events would LIGO detect per year? And although we haven't made a complete catalog of all the possibilities, it appears that LIGO just is off the chart for a large, large range of parameters. Essentially, when the mass less than around 50 times or mass squared is less than around 50 times the tension, you have hundreds of decay events of measured events per second, things that are clearly ruled out already. So essentially, what we're doing is ruling out a large class of models. We're not really predicting that bursts will be detected. That's because of the extreme sensitivity to the mass. So all of our equations are exponentially sensitive to the mass. And that's why we're not really predicting bursts so much as ruling out models. There are some other rather interesting possibilities that, that we're planning to put some calculations into. And what's interesting is that the kinks and the small scale structure on these wiggly segments of string also lead to extremely intense gravitational bursts. And that's because the monopoles are being accelerated by any structure on the string. And it's the gamma factor, which we saw in the strain equation, which determines the amplitude of the burst. So since these monopoles are always very relativistic, there's going to be essentially a constant stream of bursts as long as there's small structure on the strings. Another interesting feature is that the oscillation of these segments smooths out the strings. And the mechanism is that as the monopoles come together, they essentially reflect, they sort of comp and scatter, in a certain sense, the structure on that string back towards itself. And that, in a certain sense, heats up the string. It really amplifies the wiggles. And we know that when you get more wiggles on a string, you get more loop production. That's the scaling solution in action. And so these collapsing strings will generate a huge number of wiggles and small loops, and then lose that energy to loops, and then expand again, and essentially be very, very smooth or very cold. So this is a new effect for the scaling solution, is that we really smoothen out these strings after one oscillation. And then another very interesting feature of this burst and also stochastic radiation, which we haven't actually taken into account yet, is that there's a certain coherence to it. And it's coherent in the sense that the strings of a given length all become dynamical at the same time. When they're superhorizon, they're not oscillating. And as soon as the horizon exceeds the horizon length and exceeds the string length, they become dynamical and they begin to oscillate. So throughout the universe, all strings of a given length become dynamical at the same time. And they all start out in phase. They all start out fully stretched. What that means is there's a coherence to both the stochastic and to the burst radiation from these strings. Now this effect is washed out by intercommutation of segments. I have two segments which will essentially trade a piece of length. And this trading has, the primary effect of this trading is to wash out the coherence of the spectrum of gravitational waves. It's not clear if there's enough intercommutation to totally get rid of the signature. That's a calculation that needs to be done still. So this is a little animation to display how monopole and structure, in this case a kink of the string, interact. So with the monopole, which is essentially moving at the speed of light, and a kink always moves at the speed of light, in this case because this part of the string is moving down and this part to the right, this kink is moving at the speed of light down into the right, and it's going to collide with this monopole up around here. There's a burst at this moment. That's when the acceleration of the monopole changes, and its extreme gamma factor focuses the burst up in that direction. Now we have a much more mild kink than we had before. This was a 90 degree angle before. So this is the effect of air conditioning the segments, in essence. We're scattering the structure off the monopoles as they move apart and cooling that structure down. If I run this backwards, it shows how you heat up this structure. I've turned a mild kink into a sharp kink by the monopole oscillating towards each other. So this really is air conditioning. It's we're heating up the string, letting it dissipate its energy, and then stretching it out again and cooling it down. So we expect this to produce relatively straight and very smooth segments oscillating in the universe. So the main points that I've talked about is that monopoles are generic instability of cosmic superstrings and possibly of even non-superstring cosmic string networks. The fact that these monopoles are so relativistic gives an extremely strong signal, even for very, very light strings, those we could never detect otherwise. The exponential sensitivity to the monopole mass means it's a highly model-dependent statement as to whether or not there's any signature. And the coherence and air conditioning effects make monopole bursts quite striking and unique. Thank you.
Yes, so you're producing the monopoles before inflation. And blocking things after the inflation.
That's right. We're not really producing monopoles, but they certainly exist within the spectrum before inflation. They may have been produced by some other mechanism. Yes.
But you need a median of inflation in order to break up things and get the signature.
Exactly. So after inflation, we need to produce some non-determinant.
Right. The only question I had is that this is a brain inflation, so the energy scales are quite different at the end of inflation and at the beginning. So how does the monopole that you produce locally at the end of inflation, how does that monopole know about the physics in the bulk? How does he know what mass to assume?
Right. So in the sketch I had earlier, the mass of the monopole is exactly given by the integrate, the proper length of this string. So the proper length of this string will vary based on the warp factor of this throat and whether this throat is really far away or really close to this point.
Right.
And this dynamics does not really change during inflation. So the monopole mass probably does not change that much during inflation.
Okay.